You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest on my podcast this week is Alexander Sommer, CEO of dSwiss.
We have taken a slightly contrarian view and are running a vertically oriented business. From a hardware perspective up the software stack, we actually control the entire infrastructure. Now, that makes for one very interesting component. If you just ignore all the noise, we are definitely not going to be impacted by some of the... there's no ties to larger technology vendors.
This is Alexander. We dig into how we chose vertical integration over cloud convenience to build unshakable customer trust. You'll hear how dSwiss turned compliance into a competitive moat, and why geopolitical shifts suddenly made their contrarian infrastructure choices look brilliant. It's a sharp conversation about building differentiation through what others consider economically unviable, and what happens when the market validates your contrarian bet. Well, hi, Alexander. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for having me here and allowing me to share my story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I was introduced to you by someone on LinkedIn recommended I had a look at what your company dSwiss is doing, and it inspired me also because of its history. And we discussed a little bit before, a lot of times I have the founders on the call, and now I've got someone that took over from a founder and taking the company to its next stage. So that's something that I always like to discuss, and because new insights come out. Mm-hmm. Before we start talking about the company, a little bit about you. What gives you energy? What drives you as an entrepreneur?
What drives me? I think in general, I mean, I've discovered sort of about a decade and a half ago that I have a real passion for building, whether it's building teams, companies, offices, departments. And either way, it's something about creating and achieving measurable outcomes. And I think these measurable, tangible outcomes that you can achieve is often something that, you know, specifically in an entrepreneurial setting, is a thing that you can really see and feel. Mm-hmm. I think as I matured or grew older, however way you want to see it, I think the people aspect came and joined the story. You start to view life a little bit differently. And, you know, one of the things that now moves me more is how can I make an impact to the world around me, to the people that I work with, the societies that I operate in. I think everybody has a set of traits that they're equipped with. And I think mine fit well into the world of building and running businesses. And that's my way of making an impact.
Exactly. Funny that you say it's like a decade ago, I started to realize, because you have to grow into that. I mean, I realized the same thing for myself. Things that you've always, never really thought about, suddenly it starts to click. Like, this is what I get energy from.
Yes, it's like if you have, there's these moments when you take a step back and you realize, oh, look, this is really the stuff. If this is the sort of the red line that goes through all of the things that I really enjoy doing. And, I guess, how do I form that into sort of a career now in whatever way or form?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the magic happens when you actually recognize it and then start to act on it, to make it, well, to amplify it almost. Yeah. So what I learned is that in September 23, you took over the helm at a company called dSwiss, headquartered in Zurich. Company exists for about 17 years. Just for us to summarize a little bit, like what dSwiss does, what is the big idea behind the business?
Okay, so really, what dSwiss is the origin is around securing, digital services. That's kind of where it came from. It was a company built around securing and protecting information that matters. And really, there's the focus on not only security but also privacy. The company has done a phenomenal job over its history to emerge into to an institution that. That companies out there trust. Companies with sensitive information, as well as individuals, they want to make sure that their information is in the right hands. And in that regard, we also have a remarkable track record, not only in the way that we protect it, but also at the scale that we are able to deliver our services. So when you look at us, is we are on a mission to really be there for, an ever-growing number of sensitive information that floats around in the world. Where we believe that customers should have the right that data is protected, it's guarded with care, because it is something that says a lot about who we are, and making sure this is governed correctly is important. And so it's our vision that we're going to be that we want to be the company that other companies and individuals trust with the stuff that really matters.
So how should I see that? Is that because at the end, most of the information that a business has needs to be protected. I mean, I come from the ERP world. It's about finance information. You don't want that to be on the street.
Yes.
But so is that a layer around it? Is it then used by technology vendors, or is it used as a mechanism for companies to say, okay, this is the infrastructure?
Yes. It's really a mechanism for companies to exchange information with their end customers.
Okay.
So that's really where we play strongly. And so if you are, for example, specifically in the regulated industries where we have a sort of strong foothold, you're very often confronted with customer action. You share information from some system with them, or you have those customers share information with you. Most of that information contains sensible information that you want to make sure is guarded and protected along all stages of the value chain. In order to do that, you need the right tooling. And now that kind of comes to question, who do you entrust that with? Are these services that when you're big enough, build yourself? Or do you work with a specialist provider whose sole mission and focus is to do that and do that well?
Yeah, famous story. I just came from a call where exactly that was discussed. Some companies still think that what you do and what you specialize in and spend 17 years on building, that they can do it as well.
Yes.
And yeah, maybe some can. Question is whether you should do that.
That's exactly the right question. Most people can do everything, but not all of these things are very much sensible decisions. So,
It's about the core business of the company, right? Yeah.
exactly.
So when you took over the helm in 23 in September, what became your game plan? I mean, you come in, you have your 90 days, you look at things, you also get things whispered in your ear about where the company should ideally go. What has become your own conclusion?
So what was my game plan? I think my game plan first and foremost was to understand the ecosystem that I've stepped into, right? I mean, if you have a mature company, you come in and you have one set of core assets, that's your employee, and then you have another set of core assets, which is your customer. So for me, that was very much about how do I make sure that I understand both worlds? Starting with the customers is okay, where do they see our value proposition? Where do we come in? What wishes do they have for us? And then on the employee side is okay, why, when did you join the company? And, why did you join? What do you like about working here? So I actually took extensive time also on the employee side to interview every single employee, get to know them, understand their story and motivation to make sure that I understand what is really the heartbeat of this company, because that is something important to carry into the future. Indifferent of how and where we want to shape the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I applaud for that because not all people that take over take their time, and they have their own beliefs about how things should work, and
Yes.
I've seen that clash as well. So what was something that you found that made the company different and in this case unique in terms of the value you could create to its customers?
Well, there's two things. So first and foremost, it was a company where employees cared about one another. And I think that was one thing that was very important for me. So underlying, if employees care for one another, you have a very good chance that they will effectively collaborate with one another, that they will give their best, and ultimately create the right customer outcomes. So I'm very much a believer in a very strong culture, because I think that will bring the best out of the people and ultimately drive the customer outcomes. When we look at it, is the employees all exerted a lot of care, right? We're in the business when it comes to securing and protecting information. Trust is the key thing that you have to build with your customers. Trust is something that you don't just drive through just pure innovation, but simply delivering on your promise day after day, month after month, year after year, right? And it's something very hard to gain and very quick to lose. And so in the business that we are in, one of the benefits of being a little bit older, or being in the business longer, is that we have earned that trust and kept that trust. And I think that's something that is very that is outstanding and that I wanted to keep. So the question is then, how do you take that and where do you want to refine and make sure that you maintain and remain with the stuff that is really the best and enhance it where it hasn't been in the past?
Let me make a small interruption here. Alexander just made a remark that sets his approach apart from conventional SaaS thinking about customer relationships. He explained that trust isn't built through innovation alone, but by delivering on your promise day after day, month after month, year after year. What it means is that consistency beats cleverness when building lasting customer relationships. And this is what remarkable software companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone. Then they focus on the essence. Lastly, they aim to be different, not better. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Fascinating. I like that story. It reminds me, well, there's a number of things. I mean, I wrote this book, The Remarkable Effect, and you tick already a couple of boxes that where you have a particular perspective on. And one of them at the end is how you talk about the value for customers and how that's perceived, and not only perceived, but actually delivered consistently. Trait number two, remarkable software companies offer something valuable and desirable. Doing that one time, a lot of companies can do that, but doing it consistently is a different thing. So how do you go about it? How are you steering in your organization to keep that right mind balance in terms of doing things that are A, valuable, because that's what it needs to be, otherwise people won't buy it and they won't stay with it. But particularly that word desirable is an important one. So that
yes.
is also sticky, they keep coming back, not out of being locked in, but because they want to.
So I think there are sort of two things. So from an innovative part is, desirable has also changed a little bit over time, right? I think one of the things that people value more today is the ease of doing business, right? The ability to do things has improved over time. I think, if you just think as a consumer, mobile phones have given you easy access. So that sort of easiness is something that in some form or fashion, everybody really wants to see in the solutions that they consume. I think we do this now in two ways. We have very much set a focus on how do we make sure that the time to value that we're able to deliver to our customers happens at an increased speed, which is, it's speed is sometimes contrary to being reliable and consistent because, you have to find the right balance.
Mm.
I think that's a very sort of important element. The other element is maybe also an interesting one. The angle also has changed over the years. I think one thing that has really much sort of captured the hearts and minds of our business customers is compliance, unfortunately. So regulatory effects that impact businesses, that means they need to make sure that they have the ability to report, that they ensure certain measures are taking place. Have become a necessary evil that businesses have to adhere to. So one of the things that we do is we make sure that from a compliance posture, we help them meet these requirements in a very more easy fashion. So it's valuable to them and it's desirable because every company with ever increasing IT estates has to worry about where do I set my focus, because you don't get more people, you don't get more budgets. So let's make sure we can abstract that. And then
Exactly.
lastly, the other desirable thing, and that's something to celebrate also, is when there are certain times when workloads increase more than others, and nothing happens, that's actually the sign that you've done everything right. Because in those moments, you know that your customers didn't have to worry. They're at peace of as a peace of mind. And that's something that's actually very desirable,
Yeah.
but not maybe a common perception. So sometimes it's also to celebrate those things.
But that's what people at the end talk about, you know? It is peace of mind. They invest happily to know I'm covered.
Yes.
It's all, yeah, and what you also were saying about this mix of, I mean, the compliance. I mean, not everybody will look at compliance in a similar way. Some do it to tick boxes, others are more, you know, if we are non-compliant, the effects on the business are something we cannot pay for in one way or the other, whether even if we have enough money or resources to deal with it. So did that whole thing of what makes you valuable and desirable to the right customers, did it do anything also to you, how you go to market and who you say no to? Has that changed since you started in 23?
I think one of the things that we have really started to focus on is to make sure we have on the industries those that truly value what we have. So if you look at the regulated industries, financial services, insurance, government, those are the kind of sort of verticals that I think we have found particularly value what we have, and see a lot of use. In terms of how it has changed otherwise, I think saying no is yes. I think one thing has sort of helped us evolve our product and our value proposition. We have a particular strength in making sure that the exchange and the storage of sensitive information is governed very well. Now, the way to consume this, there are some standardized ways on how customers consume our solution, and that's very much the case. But what you also find is that the type of value we provide is something that cu some customers want to consume differently. So, in other words, we are then confronted with the discussion, well, are you going to build something for them that is more particular to their need? Or do you say no? Well, there's maybe a third way, because the first way of catering to their particular needs is not really desirable for them, right? We may solve the problem, but we will not solve it sustainably. Also, we're not the best at anticipating every particular business challenge that every person or every company has out there. Saying no, well, I mean, you say no to business, that doesn't create the right outcomes for the customer and you. But what we realize too is that we can empower customers and potentially other third parties with tools that allow them to utilize what we do best and use it in their context in the right way, in an easy and consumable fashion. So from a strict software as a service, we have started to build out a little more of a platform idea that now customers are able to consume, combine different services, and use it at the heart of securing the stuff that really matters. And
Interesting.
that really has a it's a very powerful tool, because we kind of do the hygienic factor, the stuff that you need to take care of. We do that in an easy to do fashion, and we allow customers to drive innovation where they really can differentiate themselves.
That's interesting. Well, which is and on the one hand side, the saying no has sort of stretched itself, and you found a new way to address a particular need that you would normally say no to, with offering your platform in a different way. Yeah, fascinating. I got a question about it later on. But every time I'm speaking to people that are in the security space or in the compliance space or in the in that type of arena, at the end, maybe I'm of course I'm exaggerating, but the way people often think about it, yeah, of course it needs to be compliant, and of course it needs to be secure. So what do you then do differently in order to, yeah, go beyond the noise about all the promises, maybe the false promises in the market, but everybody's saying, yeah, all the things that you also say?
That's a very good question. I think, I think maybe one interesting business model choice that we have made, and it's a little bit on how we are built up from a technology stack. So, the I would probably say over the last decade and a half, the default standard of building technology or technology businesses is via the means of a public cloud. Right, with a vendor that build a set of extremely powerful tools out there that companies of all sizes use to innovate, to the point that for some specifically smaller ones, there's no way around this. We have taken a slightly contrarian view and are running a vertically oriented business. So yes, we are renting our data center space from where our solutions are being delivered. I mean, this is a game of scale where we can compete. But from a hardware perspective up the software stack, we actually control the entire infrastructure. Now that makes for one very interesting component. Even if you just ignore all the noise, we are definitely not going to be impacted by some of the there's no ties to larger technology vendors, meaning we can be seen as a very much alternative solution. That allows, for example, in the case of a DR strategy, to work and operate. The other interesting part about that is too, is I think it also has shown that you can actually run a successful business at scale by, controlling things of your value proposition, your value stack that typically people believe is no longer can no longer be economically done unless, you go with a with a third party that is out there.
You touch upon a number of big ones. First of all, I mean, it goes by the by trade number three, and aim to be different, not just better. And that's that better. You've left behind way beyond, well, long ago, the contrarian view, and actually having the guts to make the decisions to say, okay, well, this is what we want to achieve, and this is what we stand for, which is what I hear, the stack approach, not being connected to the larger vendor, and doing the things that actually are economically unviable for other companies, that they don't, even if they had the choice to do that, they would say no way, because it would destroy our whole business model. That is a really strong differentiated asset. I like that. Thank you for sharing that. Has that recently evolved, or was it already in practice long ago?
It actually was. It was in practice, and I think the question actually came a few times. Would we want to change that? And now, interestingly enough, this part is something that I've been familiar with because I played in this arena quite some time ago. But actually, in that arena, I also saw and held the belief that certain things, if you do them at a certain scale, you actually do have alternatives, and you can look at them. And we stayed consistent to that, and I think it's a choice that will pay off in the future as well. I think we're kind of going in some, well, what I feel unprecedented, uncharted waters at the moment with the sort of geopolitical changes, right?
True.
I'm at the time where I grew up in the post Cold War era, and probably in the time before, sort of, I don't know if maybe this will be the great phase of re insulation where countries sort of retracted from the global scale and took a little more inward look, right? So I always saw the benefit of collaborating across borders, consuming services across borders, and working in that arena where now companies are and individuals are looking around and saying, well, maybe some common beliefs of how the world works need to be questioned, and looking to maybe diversify their footprint. And so we as a vendor, due to our, well, maybe even conservative choice, are now positioned to be a differentiator in that, which I think is also a very nice thing because when we talk about, building successful companies in Europe and Building businesses that make it different, those are the kind of choices that allow us to do that.
Exactly. And you do that at a moment where you are at your strength, and then you stick doing it. And I also applaud for you where you had the choice to maybe like loosen the lines a little bit and say maybe you can actually go a little bit broader, loosen a little bit up, that you didn't do that. And how is that reacted to by your customers? Has that strengthened the bond, or has it helped with the growth?
It certainly, I think it strengthens the bonds with our customers, right? And actually, you can see that question has come up a few times to understand, okay, how are you positioned there? In the market, it's coming to fruition now. Look, some of the customer wins take a little bit of time for us. It's just in the industry that we work at, it's not an overnight decision.
Yeah, sure.
But we see that in the recent months, the amount of interest has increased. And personally, I've had several conversations with the C-level executives in different industries that are now looking at the matter of, okay, how am I positioned from a technological point of view, and do I maybe have to rethink my strategy? And I think part of that is a natural thing. It's usually always trigger points. Sometimes it's cost, sometimes it's the competition, or sometimes it's also things like the geopolitical landscape that make people
Sure.
reconsider things.
Yeah, exactly. And well, I mean, going into trade number, what is it, six, creating fans, not customers. You said in the beginning that your whole value prop is actually underpinned with trust. And it takes a long time to create trust, and you also lose it fast. It comes walking and it goes running, as they say. What is, from your perspective, the most important in order to keep that fan base growing? Because it doesn't stop with the first sell to them. It builds over time, and it becomes a muscle in the organization almost.
Yes, so I think there's two ways to grow fans. What does it come down to? I think inherently, one of the things is if you depending on who where we sit in which organizations, our customers cherish that they don't get in trouble. It's maybe the negative view. The other view is they become the heroes because they stand for stabilities, and everybody wants to be seen as the guy, that gets the job done, that takes care of stuff. So I think that is, you make people's lives easier, and you do so consistently, and they will love you for it, right? So I think that is the one thing that creates fans. Now I think the other part, and I think this is, I think, very important when it comes to growing companies, depending on who you address, having a fan is very, very powerful because most of these fans don't always work in the same company their entire
Sure.
life. They will move on. And so when they move on to the next one, they will come and think about you again.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
one fan could be two customers, the first one and
Four.
one later. So the power of pleasing those customers and the power of creating a fan base here, it's not even pleasing, is actually exceeding their expectation to make them raving fans of your service or your product is very much a key to successful growth.
Glad you say so. But the question, of course, is like everybody knows that. But the question, of course, how do you operationalize that? Because you already said it's the product, but it's also how we communicate them in the sales process, how you set that bar there,
Yes.
then how you implement it, how you service them, how customer success goes in there. There's a whole number of things connected.
Yes, I think that's a very interesting one. So this maybe is a kind of comes down to maybe one thing, and this sort of executional excellence, really. I think a lot of people talk about strategy and the things that you should be focusing on or should be doing and also not doing. But I think one of the most powerful tools is to create a machinery, so a well-oiled machinery where you have sort of different elements that really work well together to basically create that flawless flow in case of the customer, of its journey through your organization. So, the way they feel, they're being spoken with and they're being attended to from the first moment that they engage with you, through their process until conversion, until they're being served, and the delivery thereafter is how that works. And I think so. One of the things that I've learned over, I guess, my career, is the immense power that a well-calibrated machinery, a purpose-built machinery, can unleash, because it really creates that consistent look, feel, touch, for the customer. I mean, if you think around some of the most successful brands in the world, it is about consistency, right? It is the ability to do what you say, time after time after time again. And then those at global scale, it feels there the same way as it feels over there. And then you have, built all the layers. It's not just processes, it's very much people, cultures, and mindsets in the right way.
It goes back to what you said earlier on around your assets, talking to all the customers and what they believe is the value that you uniquely deliver, but also, of course, you talk to all your people. And what you found there is how well they take care of each other and work with each other. So a lot of companies, of course, I mean, there's this ongoing thing around silos, and marketing is marketing and sales is sales. How do you then operationalize that people keep each other honest between the departments, that people call each other out when you sort of break the pattern internally? Do you have something like that?
Well, I think one of the things, and maybe that comes down to it's really how do you want to steer an organization? I very much believe in sort of value-driven organizations. So having a clear set of
Excellent.
values that you use to steer the behavior. And how do you do this? Well, one of it is certainly calling it out in, or holding people accountable and saying, look, this is in line with our values. But that's also then something that you have to operationalize. Even so, for example, on the HR side, it's like, okay, how do you do performance reviews? How do you set goals, right? Aside of maybe goal setting mechanisms like OKRs, it's about what mechanisms do you embody to achieve those, and encouraging this and setting the incentives that adherence to those is, the path for not only company success but also individual success within the company.
But a lot of companies do that and still end up with a mess. Well, they think they do it, but possibly the metrics are more internal than external. And I think what I hear you saying is that the customer and the customer, the value that you create for customers and for them to keep coming back and recommend you wherever they can is something that is that's driving everything. I mean, for my research, it was also. The importance of understanding and delivering value to customers as a driver for business success. So you use that lens to make people connected. And this is your role in your particular field to accomplish. Is that correct?
Yes, and I think you bring that back when you it's about, delighting customers, is creating those moments, making sure you have a feedback mechanism so that it becomes rewarding for the employees, because that also is something that energizes employees. Going back to your first question, what energizes me, it's building something, creating an outcome, a positive outcome. So once you see that, that's a stimuli. And then what you end up is getting a very much a flywheel effect, because you have people that care about the work that they do, and you will see and feel that in the interactions. Their customers will feel that. They will reward you with the business, which allows you to create new opportunities for your employees, and so it continues. There was a was just very recently at a trade show, and I was talking to various vendors out there about their solutions, and it was very interesting that I, after two interactions back to back, the first one was a company where employees just were as lackluster as they could have been. It didn't feel engaging at all. And actually later on showed that I had a follow-up call that no one ever attended. Where on the second company, you could feel that people were burning for the product, were fully engaged in what they were doing, and you even walked away with this as being a memorable event. And the first interaction that was set up was just as delightful as what you saw that day.
It makes such a difference.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all going back to confidence. I think we used that word earlier on as well. The moment people have confidence about what they deliver and they can communicate it in the right way to the customers, and the customer sees that, and you can actually promise something and live up to that, no matter where you are in the company, it just strengthens everything. And it will, like you say, it will come back because people on the outside of the four walls will talk about it to peers. And if they go to a different job, they'll come back to you as well. Now, looking at the time as well, I want to kind of hone in on one of the traits in my book that we shortly talked about before we started, which is selling the mastering of the art of selling the idea, not the product. And particularly in this case, for your type of product that you sell, which is something that is, it's not, I mean, if an outsider hears about it, it's not like the most excited thing in the world, right?
I
So,
agree.
what have made you decide or learn that the way to get people to lean forward and say this is what we need is through story or through selling the idea, not the product? And can you give an example of that?
So I think from a company perspective here, we are filling an integral part. So the story that is about to the employees is like, for some, it's for the first time they're in a field like this, so it's a little bit maybe harder to understand, grasp, and relate to. But I think if you go into to show them that, by being able to be part of this, we're able to really touch a lot of lives out there. So we serve thousands of businesses and millions of users. So being part of us allows us to positively touch all of these lives by, taking sort of a worry away from them that some of the stuff that they have may be in the wrong hands. And it gives them the ability to sleep and trust. And while this is not the far-reaching thing, it's one that is actually very powerful. Now we're also in a world that's ever changing. There's many threats out there, and having stuff protected is something very valuable. Now sometimes you also need to tell that through a story. Some customers sometimes come to you and say, "Look, there were a few things here. There was, either we were attacked, but thanks to you, our data remains safe, and we're very grateful for that." So that's something that you can then bring inside the company and say, "Hey, look, this is where we make it different. We have a very happy customer here."
Exactly.
And that makes it very tangible. Now, on the business side, there's a similar thing. It's humans are doing business with humans. And I think there's two elements to what we do. So the one thing is to, yes, make your lives easier. I think safer is one thing, but we also make it easier. And I think that is something that gets people excited, because we're all in a world full of complexity that we have to manage. And I think more and more people are feeling overwhelmed with all the challenges they're facing, and we're able to abstract some of them. The other thing is that we do is, for businesses, look, we give you a solution that you can use to deliver innovation and secure solutions to your customers. It's a way to make sure that you as a business are trusted by your end customers. It gives you longevity and protection, because as much as you trust us, your customer trusts you. But we do it in a way that you can focus on the stuff that is fun, make the difference, and then obviously don't have to worry about the stuff that is necessary, but not necessarily the most exciting.
Great examples. And so many companies at the end can learn from that because so often the conversation just goes towards the features and how cool the latest AI features are. And that's six level deep security layer and so on, and all the details around that. But what the customer is at the end buying is, a feeling, an outcome,
Peace of mind.
a peace of mind, exactly. In many cases, that is a different life, no frustrations. So the translation from that to that through stories, and particularly if you have customers that actually that you can quote, brings everything alive. One book that I read in the past, which is already like almost 2 decades ago right now, it's a book called Made to Stick, and I've used the principles of that virtually everywhere in my life, even in private situations. And it's the six character word success, sort of the Dutch way of spelling it without one S. Simple, the simplicity of it, which coming to life through stories. Unexpectedness, that's a very powerful one. Things that people don't think about, but it's still need to be thought about. Concreteness, which is also encapsulated in stories. Credibility comes from stories, but there's definitely elements in there. Emotion, which is what you just highlighted as well. The examples that you gave were about emotional value as well. And last but not least, story. And if you tick those boxes all, your idea will stick and you'll likely have an easier sales cycle, an easier marketing cycle, and everything that comes from it. So it's super powerful and so underestimated. One more question to round it off. Because I saw that you've had a long career in the enterprise software space. I saw Rackspace, the first company you work for, correct?
Yes.
Rackspace, yeah, indeed. You've been in CFO roles, COO roles, and you've also been the CEO a couple of times, and now, of course, from DSwiss. If you go back to your career and look at one do and one don't that you'd like to share with peer entrepreneurs, what would it be? What has been especially valuable to you in your career?
On the don't side, let's start with this. I think sometimes don't overthink it. I think I think it's important to analyze situations to get a picture. You will never truly understand the opportunities or the risks fully because you will always have limited information. So I think sort of trust your instincts and go with the decision. At those times. And I think specifically the intuition, I guess, is something that may also get cultivated over time, but I think it's a sometimes also underestimated tool you have in your arsenal, in the world where everything is sort of data driven and analytics. So don't overthink it is the don't. On the do side, it's a tricky one. So I think one of my core philosophies kind of comes back down to the people. And I think it's really do put the people first. That comes to how you build teams. It's about making sure that you have a complementary team of people. It's not about just people that you like working with. Yes, you need to have that trusted bond to do the right things, but make sure you have the right team in place. Do think about engagement and professional passion as a differentiator, because it ultimately is the key that will get you to understanding any customer that is out there, all the needs, and building the products to serve that market right.
True.
And I know the reason I say do with the people, or do have the focus on the people, is I think it's often talked about, but it's not always truly lived. And I think this is kind of where, looking back at least at the Rackspace story, where I guess it was sort of the longest standing almost laboratory, if you want to look at it this way, because I had 13 years of viewing and seeing how that company evolved. But it was truly amazing to see that if you have a set of sort of like-minded oriented people, and we're talking 6,000 at the end, what that was able to accomplish.
Strong. Yeah. Like-mindedness is a very strong element in there, exactly. Because it's about the alignment at the end. It's the team part. So the people, of course, is a group of humans, but the moment it becomes a
Unit,
cohesive
yes.
unit that has the same passion that they stand for, which is in this case the customer value that needs to come out from various angles of what their specialisms are all about. Thanks for sharing that. Where can people go to find out more about DSwiss, or to say hi to you?
Well, dswiss.com, that's where you find us. Me on LinkedIn is the one profile that I've cultivated over the years. And other than that, it's yeah, I think this is where I build personal connections. I reach out and we can talk. And I'm always interested in hearing interesting perspectives that people have, because sometimes exactly these sort of third degree connections that take you out of your network comfort zone give you some of the most inspirational insights that you can find.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that as well. That starting those conversations based on insights that, yeah, going back to that word success, that are unexpected. Yeah. That's why they resonate because they're not, well, they come from a different perspective. They don't come to sell, they come to create value. That's how I think about it as well. Thank you very much. Thanks for sharing the story.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you having me here.
And that wraps up my conversation with Alexander Sommer, CEO of dSwiss. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Tom. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.